Welcome to the Signal Creative Podcast. Signal is a female-focused organisation that supports the creation of original work. We travel around Australia and this podcast features the stories of people we meet and our experiences on the road.
We're at the National Library at the moment, which is actually pretty cool. That's why I'm talking a little bit quietly.
Shh, we're in a library.
Did you ever see that thing on YouTube called Silent Library?
No. Was it hilarious?
Google it. Google it. It's a kind of a 90s Japanese game show. These guys have to do gross things, but they have to be silent.
Oh.
They've got to remain silent through it, and that's the challenge.
I'm going to watch it.
You've got to see. Yeah. You've got to see the challenges.
It sounds good.
Yeah. One of them is just like copper face full of a horrible smell.
Oh.
This is the first of a number of interviews that we did down in Wagga Wagga when we were down for NAIDOC week.
We love Wagga Wagga. And yeah, everyone that we met there.
We had the best time. So many awesome people. We ran some podcasting workshops, interviewing workshops, and that was all just such a great experience.
Yeah.
It was very special to be there for NAIDOC week.
Yep. So we got to meet some of the women who were a part of the Hands on Weavers.
Yep.
We also met some women who were involved in the Wiradjuri Nation Rebuilding, which is a course now at the university.
A couple of those women actually teach units as part of that, which is pretty amazing. There was a lot of stuff going on in Wagga, and
it's not a silent library now.
This is quite a noisy library, as you can tell. One of the many amazing people we met was a performer by the name of Rose Quartz, who is a drag queen, recently returned from the Miss First Nations pageant.
She was amazing.
Living her best life, I would say, especially just having so many people from the Wagga community contribute to her gown. And
Well, coincidentally, just the women that were there of all ages, they all just support her.
They're all about it. Yeah.
They all had watched all the YouTubes if they couldn't make it. It was
live streaming.
And they were all there for her.
Being massive drag race fans, it was just great for us to hear about all of that.
Yeah.
The lip sync battles and
all the classic things.
Yeah, beauty challenges.
Yeah. I think I was just a bit sycophantic when I met her. I was just a bit gooey, I think is the word.
Yeah.
I just wanted to look deep into her eyes.
Teach me to lip sync.
Teach me everything. Teach me how to beat my face.
I need to know how to beat my face. I'm trying.
I'd try really hard.
Here's the interview we did at the E3 Art Space in Wagga with Rose Quartz.
Rose was the creation, I'd say, of my sisters. When I was younger, they used to dress me up in a Little Mermaid getup, as well as all their different sort of dresses, skirts, whatever. And then the first time I did drag, I was 17 for a friend's birthday party that was a drag-themed birthday party. I didn't hate it. Like, I looked really pretty. Everyone told me I looked gorgeous. And then when I was 21, I was introduced to Drag Race, and something about it kind of stuck. I realised I had a skill set that was being wasted. So I developed that towards a drag character. Rose was a rural city queen, so there wasn't a lot of exposure. Where a lot of queens in cities like Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide can go out on the weekend and just be in drag to go to the gay club, we didn't have as much of an excuse here. So home time, dress ups around the house and that was completely normal when you were living with me. Like, different housemates have seen me just practicing makeup, styling wigs, that sort of thing. I was a part of Burlesque Wagga Wagga, which is sort of really what got me performing in drag. Not long after I started there, I got the role of Ursula in the Little Mermaid production here in Wagga Wagga. So it just sort of developed itself. So I did an anagram of my full boy name, and it came back with a wannabe rosary mind. When I was around about 16, I made it my Tumblr URL, and I became obsessed with that idea. So a wannabe rosary mind molded into rosary blossom, because the few occasions I'd done drag, I loved the name Rosary. I'd always worn flowers. I went for a more holistic approach and I looked at the stone of love being rose quartz. And that's sort of what I wanted my drag to stand for, was self-love, creativity, and really accepting yourself in a world that isn't always so accepting. I think drag as a platform, Australian-wise, it existed since I was a small boy. Courtney Act was on the first run-through of Australian Idol, Coletta being on Big Brother. But it was never sort of mass exposure. It didn't have a following, like I'm sure in the cities it would have been, but rurally that hadn't spread down. So when Drag Race was released, it sort of shared this whole other world you didn't know existed. That it wasn't just like this little craft or this little putting on dresses here and there, that it was an entire universe with its own sort of guidelines and ways to create the outfits and the works of art. So I think it just brought drag to a mainstream and made kids realize they could do it, because nothing like that had quite existed until then. Drag Race brings in this element of humanity, and it's the stories that those girls are sharing and letting themselves be so raw with. So there was the rural things I've connected with many a queen who have said they just sort of did it in secrecy in their little houses and couldn't wait to get to the city. I never had any sort of trials or tribulation when it came to my family. They have been incredibly supportive, open and accepting from the age of three. Everyone knew I was just quite a flamboyant boy. People in the town, a different sort of reception. It was very interesting. What I found was a lot of disconnect I would find the most would be from other gay men who weren't ready to come out yet. And because I had sort of been 100% comfortable within myself from around about the age of 12, 13, to the point where occasionally it was a caricature, because I'd based what I thought my life was supposed to be off of Will and Grace from the HBO series, because that was my only sort of look into the gay world as such a young man. A lot of homosexuals who weren't quite there yet, they would give me a lot more trouble than some of the straighter counterparts in high school and stuff. So it isn't the kind of tribulations you would expect as much. It wasn't necessarily that whole envisionment of farming rednecks sort of beating me up. It was a lot more coming from the men who weren't comfortable with themselves yet, who would their torment and bully. And the straight guys didn't quite care. I'm very grateful to have been a teenager in that 2000s period. Miss First Nations was a Indigenous beauty pageant held in Melbourne this year. It was in its fourth consecutive year. What happens is we get up and we do 4 days of drag, and that is exactly what you think it is. So the very first day we arrived, we had a beautiful cocktail party and went into the lip sync showdown, which was pretty and pink themed, where we all had to wear gorgeous little pink outfits, pull a song out of a bucket, and that was it. We had to lip sync it then and there. So I was seventh on the list. I went second to last. So naturally the nerves were insane. I was left with 3 songs and I pulled Aretha Franklin's Think, which I was quite happy about. And I had a beautiful little gypsy ensemble. The next day was a photo shoot. So it was Miss Photogenic and we had to wear our First Nations gown. Mine was done by different artists here in the community, 3 different people working together, as well as my creative director, Mitch Summerfield, who painstakingly glued feathers on for like 6 hours in the hotel room before this photo shoot. He was up for most of the night just gluing all of these on because it wasn't finished in time. We were then put in the middle of Melbourne in the middle of the day on Flinders Street, which is basically Central Station of Melbourne. It was packed. There was tourists everywhere. We went down Hosier Lane and had the photos. We went out the front of Flinders Street. We went on a tram. It was absolutely insane. We then had drag bingo that night and had the first night off of the whole competition. It was beautiful. Nothing else was to be done for that day. The next day we went into Secret Talent, where I did stand-up comedy. There was a different range of girls doing things from acrobatics to movements. There was 2 other ladies who did stand-up comedy as well. And then after that, we had the National Gown Runway, where we walked down the runway, were interviewed by the 2 runners of the pageant, and then we had to explain the concept of the dress and who had created it or what it had meant to us. The last day was the grand final performance, where you chose your own lip sync song and performed it in front of around about 3,000-4,000 people. I chose Never Enough from The Greatest Showman, so it was absolutely incredible to get that experience that I'd sort of dreamt of and had in my head, being exposed to a city in just as dramatic a light as I wanted to. And then we had the crowning ceremony, followed by a secret gig with Electric Fields, who at that time had just come back from placing second at the Eurovision contest. And we then got to perform on stage with Electric Fields for their closing number because they'd done the entire pageant's opening routine that we had a choreographed group routine to. It was just the most amazing experience. And that was the four different categories, the 4 days worth of categories.
You were shaving your face at like 6 o'clock in the morning, just being like, I wish this was over. But I wouldn't have changed it for a thing. To be recognised by some of the industry's most incredibly talented Indigenous members was absolutely jaw-dropping. Like, the people I met, the feedback I got from my drag, my performances, all of it was just breathtaking. It was a really beautiful experience. I am working very hard. It's a self-driven career. So in a rural community, any form of doing drag is not just going to fall on your lap. I believe in Wagga, the want for it's huge. After the Mardi Gras especially, just seeing literally nearly all of Wagga come out to support it. Something my partner, the morning of the Mardi Gras, turned to me because I said I wasn't going in drag. I didn't want to do drag in Wagga. I was just too scared. I just wasn't doing it. And he turned to me in bed and he was like, you're going to be the first drag queen one of these little kids is going to see for the rest of their lives. And something about that was just so influential to me in that moment. I'm going to be some big envisionment in a pink sequin dress with blonde hair out to here. To some little kid that hadn't, and a beautiful, beautiful little girl came up and gave me a hug in the Mardi Gras pageant. It was the most adorable thing. It was photographed by the advertiser. She just ran out in front of the whole pageant and gave me a hug. Like, it was just gorgeous and pure, showing that sort of love of a child that hopefully the community felt that day.
Thanks for listening. Follow Signal Creative on Facebook, Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast.